Rain of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again, year after year. Oh, no.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rain of Troy Radio. This is a CarCast coming to you after USC's 2021 spring game at the Coliseum. We're going to talk about the big storylines, the takeaways, our reaction, and so much more. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play. Wherever you can get a podcast, we are there. You can find our bonus episodes on Patreon, patreon.com/Rain of Troy. Our email address is rainoftroy@fansetter.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1USC. Suck it, what's Burn Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joined along with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio, not in a car. Sorry, Keely. You gotta be with me there.
It's been so long since we've done a car cast.
I know, let's try it again. We're in the studio, not in a car.
Sorry, Keely.
And I'm your host, Mike Garcia, joined with my co-host, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, it is a CarCast. We are back talking about football, the spring game at the Coliseum. It was great to get back out there. Beautiful, picturesque day at the Coliseum, except for the haze. Couldn't make out the Hollywood sign completely. It just looked like a white smudge on the mountains. But nonetheless, beautiful day for football, and there was football played. I can confirm that part.
Well, a game with a ball that resembled a football, I believe it was a football, involving humans wearing pads and helmets and lining up 11 on 11 and tackling each other and throwing forward passes and carrying the
featuring
ball.
Featuring the cardinal and the gold, but at the same time, the cardinal and the white?
The cardinal and the white, but team cardinal, team gold, but
The irony here is that there's a spring game at the Coliseum, and the Trojans lose, the Cardinal win, but Stanford nowhere to be found. let's get to talking about it. But first, this CarCast is brought to you by Danette May and Mindful Health LLC, featuring Danette May's top superfood product from her Earth Echo Foods line, Cacao Bliss.
Yeah, you know, Michael, nothing feels better than being able to enjoy some rich, smooth, creamy chocolate and knowing that you're actually doing something good for your body.
Yeah, they start with 100% organic cacao beans that are naturally kissed by the sun, maintaining its miraculous health benefits. Then they blend it with turmeric, MCT oil, coconut, Himalayan sea salt, cinnamon, black pepper, all this other great stuff for a perfect blend to make you feel like the best you ever have.
The result, you fall in love with a truly decadent, healthy, guilt-free chocolate, removing your cravings, facilitating weight loss, boosting your energy, and reducing your inflammation all in one simple drink or cupcake or whatever it is that you decide to make with Cacao Bliss. Because, personal note here, my mother has been a huge believer in Danette May and Cacao Bliss for years now. And so we're very, very happy to have the show sponsored by them.
Yeah, for the last 8 years, they've been a leader in the superfoods market and are proud to have served millions of customers worldwide, your mom included.
Yeah, and if you are on a paleo diet, if you're gluten-free, if you're on keto, if you're vegan, if you're vegetarian, it's friendly for all of those dietary restrictions, so it's even better.
Yeah, I'm on keto right now. It's perfect for mixing things up, getting a little flavor with your lack of carbs.
Yeah, I mean, I've already asked my mother for the recipe that she uses for her chocolate mug cake that she swears by and has sworn by for a long, long while. So it's exciting to get some Cacao Bliss in our lives.
Yeah, and you can too by getting 15% off when you visit earthechofoods.com/minutemedia and use the code MINUTE15. earthechofoods.com/minutemedia and use the code 15. If you need a link, it's in the show notes. Go there and get some Cacao Bliss in your lives.
Yeah, I mean, chocolate is good. Healthy chocolate, is great.
Yeah, no one doesn't
like... What else
like
do you need?
It's Bliss, right?
It's Bliss.
And
what
else was Bliss was just being in the Coliseum like we talked about with SC wearing Cardinal and gold, the Cardinal against the gold. But for real, your first takeaways.
Yeah, I mean, the first takeaway is obviously how great it was to be back in the Coliseum, in the press box, to have a smattering of fans present, to have USC in full uniform, and going out there and scrimmaging in a real way. It wasn't just situational. It wasn't just them putting, install in where they're doing particular things. It was letting the players go out there and make plays. And I think that's the best thing about having a spring game format that USC has missed out on over the past few years, is that I think this really let individuals have their say and really let them rise and fall with the flow of the game. So it was very, very nice to see guys on offense, guys on defense get their shot. And it was, I think it was sloppy a little bit. I think it would have been more ideal to do this at the end of spring camp when everybody's a little bit more on the same page. But also, as Clay Helton said in his post game, that it's a cool learning experience because now they get to look at the tape and then go back and teach from this and learn from this. So all in all, can't complain when you have a spring game.
Yeah, the good news is that they can build from this. It was a sloppy performance. I thought the offense really had trouble moving the ball all day. The defense, definitely the sound winners here. You won't see that on the scoreboard. It was Cardinal and gold, yet the teams were dressed as offense and defense. Very confusing for fans at the Coliseum, fans watching on the Pac-12 Network, us in the press box. It was very weird. But when you put it together, you could really see what those two teams were. Part of the problem, though, is how they split the teams, because for me, the biggest talking point is the offensive line in this game was awful. Like, I don't want to sugarcoat it. It was awful, and I don't think you can really judge the offense because it was that poor. Like, I don't think we can sit here and say anything about the running game in terms of the running backs outside of... Running backs look good when they got an opportunity. The quarterbacks did not really get a chance to throw the football. Poor Miller Moss. I feel like he was getting sacked every time he dropped back or being forced into a bad throw. He never had an opportunity to look good in this game. Jackson Dart had his moments and certainly dazzled. We're going to talk about Jackson Dart in a little bit. But for the most part, the passing game could not work because of the offensive line. The running game could not work because of the offensive line. And Alicia, there might be a valid reason for the offensive line not working besides this is just your typical USC offensive line of the last decade that has just been what it is.
Yeah, and if I have one complaint about the way USC did things today, it has to do with the offensive line specifically because, yeah, how do you evaluate an offensive line that is made up of a group of five offensive linemen who haven't really played together at all? Because the way that USC put their teams together here was they split the coaching staff in half and they did a draft. And so you had, Brett Nealon lining up against, name a random offensive lineman. You have Andrew Voorhees at left tackle where he's been the left guard the whole time. You had, just Gino Quinones in there. You had Dietich at guard and it was all over the place. So I don't know that they gave the offensive line a chance to look any good. Now, would they have looked good if they had had the first teamers and the second teamers out there in the units that they've been in? I have my doubts because previous practices, the defensive line has had the better of the offensive line across the board. But it got worse today because now you're taking away the only thing that that line has in its favor, which is chemistry, which is returning four starters and having Cortland Ford being able to be in there and be a solid five that's gone for 3 weeks of practice together. So maybe we cut the offensive line a tiny bit of slack in terms of how unsettled they all looked. But I think, isn't that also like the fault of USC's coaches? Unless maybe they get something very meaningful and valuable from being able to evaluate each individual in those circumstances. Helton talked about how, you don't always get to play with the five that you practice with, that sometimes guys get thrown in, and so you have to sort of learn how to deal with that. Like, I guess that's valuable too, but I I part of me really wishes that they had in their draft drafted groups of offensive linemen, like the starting five.
Yeah, the starting five and the second five.
Yeah.
As a group. Yeah, I think that would have worked, because what we saw today was that the defensive line was 8 steps ahead of them.
Yes.
But the defensive line is used to throwing different bodies in there. It doesn't matter whether it wasn't odd to see Tua Pelotu
lining up next to Toya, lining up next to Lichtenstein. It wasn't odd to see Jamar Sakona lining up next to Stanley Taufo and lining up next to, you know, Dejon Benton. Like, that's the normal way of life for that defensive line.
Yeah, exactly.
Not for the offensive line.
Yeah, and all your stars on defense look good. Drake Jackson looked good. Thule looked good. Sakona looked good.
If we wanted to just start by just giving a shout out, I thought the entire defensive line, to a man, looked very good. I loved the flashes we saw from Jake Lichtenstein out there. Jay Toya was all over the place. Jamar Sakona was involved in practically every play. Thule made his plays. Dejon Benton stood out to me. Like, the defensive line in every iteration we saw it got the better of their offensive line and just looked really good. Now, this is the zero-sum game problem of spring camp and a spring game. Do we give that line all the credit for totally just walloping the offensive line? Or is this, you know, are they being propped up by facing an offensive line that just wasn't there?
There's some give and take, right? Because some of this is, I think we expect the defensive line to be good.
Mm-hmm.
Even though there are guys missing. There's no Pele, there's no Tui Pelotu, there's Marlon.
Yeah, there is one Tui Pelotu.
Yeah, exactly. There's no Jay Tufele.
Yeah. Those three guys, Nick Figueroa is out injured.
Those three guys, plus Nick Figueroa, like, you're talking about, ideally, those would have been your first four defensive linemen off the bench, right? Your first four that you would have had in last season. Obviously, Jay Tufele didn't play last year, but the point is that not having those guys, you would think that there would be this miss. But you saw all the guys step up last year, like Thule. We saw Nick Figueroa lead the team in sacks. You've seen Jamar Sakona step up. You've seen Jay Toya step up. All these different bodies. And there's a lot of confidence right now in Vic Soto. We talked about it before. He's like the defense's Dylan McCullough, which you have all sorts of confidence in him and everything. So you expect the defensive line to be good and to be more impressive that way. So part of it is that. The other part, so you give the offensive line a little bit of the benefit of the doubt, slightly, a little bit there. But again, when this consistently is a problem, you gotta be able to defend that pass rush, right? You got to be able to hold it off.
Or your offense needs to be designed in such a way, and this is one of our hopes for the air raid that we had,
that I don't think
has come to pass still, is fine, if you're going to run an air raid system, then make the defensive line irrelevant. Get the ball out so quickly that it doesn't matter. And that's not the offense that we've seen, which is funny because you and I were talking about this on the way home. Sorry, Keely. The people on Twitter and elsewhere complain about the air raid. Like, this is what you get when it's the air raid. It's like, I don't think what people are complaining about here has to do with the air raid. I think what they're complaining about is just not performing well. Like, you know, Mike Leach air raid, for all its limitations or whatever, like, the offensive line wouldn't be the main problem for them. They'd just be slinging it.
Right, and we've talked about it before. Oklahoma, by the metrics, have had the best offensive line in the country the last several years.
Well, and remember Washington State. Like, I remember when they came to the Coliseum when JT Daniels was USC's quarterback in 2018, and like Washington State, who was the he's now with the Jags.
Mustache guy.
He, USC was getting tons and tons and tons of pressure, and he was just negating it by how quickly he was getting it out. So like, these things, you can mitigate it. And I think USC's biggest problem is still, I don't see them mitigating it the way that they need to be to make up for the fact that maybe their offensive line isn't like this elite unit.
Yeah, I want to see the running backs involved in the receiving game a little bit more. I want to see more screens. I know people hate screens in the Lane Kiffin days, but that's a way to create extended handoffs and mitigate the rush.
Well, and what was the best element of the offense today, aside from Drake London being a badass? It was the running backs catching the ball out of the backfield.
Keontae Ingram.
Keontae Ingram looked like an absolute baller on a, I think it was 49 yards.
You know what it reminded me of? That Rojo checked that on the Hail Mary?
Yeah,
except
yeah.
Except he didn't get like crushing block from Stephen Mitchell?
So that he ran into his own offensive player, so he kind of ended up getting tackled down around like, what, the 20? But he looked great as a dump-off option who could then take off and make some men miss and stiff-arm some dudes and take off running. And we saw that from Stephen Carr as well on a third down. He converted a third and 11 beautifully.
Best Carr has looked in years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Carr just in general, I think today looked really, really bright. He had a 26-yard run that was very good. But catching the ball out of the backfield, he had a play. Vi Malapai had a couple play. Even Brandon Campbell, who didn't get a lot to work with today, like he was an effective weapon outside the pocket in that sense. So those elements are there that USC can use. They need to sort of like a part of me want again. This is my complaint about USC for years: is if USC admitted their weakness, then they could deal with it. So if USC just admitted we don't have a good offensive line, then they might be able to say, okay, fine, we need to do everything we can to make the offensive line matter less. But USC is USC, and so they're going to sit there and go like, we're great. Well, that's going to be a problem, but it's early, so.
Yeah, so the byproduct of all this is that the offense really struggled with the offensive line not being able to hold their blocks, not being able to create a pocket for the quarterbacks. But with that, let's talk about the quarterbacks, the opportunities in which they did get to throw the ball. Slovis obviously got first team reps with the Cardinal team. He was followed up by Dart on the Cardinal team. Let's talk about those two guys, Slovis and Dart. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, on Slovis, I think he never looked comfortable. I didn't see the problems with his passes that we saw from 2020. There was no wobbly ball, but he didn't look comfortable, and I think it made him slightly inaccurate at times. He threw an interception that Dorian Hewitt caught that was just woefully underthrown. Like, it wasn't wobbly. It wasn't like it came out of his hand wrong.
And that
he just
was,
missed it.
And that was a play in which he had plenty of time in the pocket to step into his throw, too.
Yes.
And, yeah, like you're saying, he it's not like he looked uncomfortable in the sense that he doesn't have confidence in his arm. He was uncomfortable because of the duress he was under.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's something that he's going to have to deal with. But it's also, this is going to be a reality for USC. And hopefully once they get the established five, maybe that'll change. Maybe that's something that we see less of when he knows who's in front of him as far as the line is concerned. I don't know.
Yeah, he did throw a 49-yard
beautifully
rainbow to Drake London. It did get, like, it was so high in the air. It held London up a stutter step. I think if he leads him by another yard or so, it might have just been a touchdown.
But I never
but
mind.
But nonetheless, neither do I. If you're giving your receiver an opportunity, like London, then it's fine.
Yeah, give London a chance. Like, that's you. I would hate for you to overthrow Drake London.
Yeah.
Give him a chance to make that chunk play. And I think that that's the, if you want to take a really positive takeaway from today, it's that Keaton Slovis is very comfortable throwing the ball to Drake London. And Drake London.
100%.
Drake London is. Drake London is something extremely special. And we saw him mostly on the outside today. And he was doing his best Michael Pittman impression. And I mean that in every sense of the compliment.
You know, it's funny. Remember we were talking about, is Michael Pittman better than Juju? Remember he had those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well.
I don't want to get there yet.
I'm ready.
At what point do we go, is Drake London better than Michael Pittman?
It's not going to take me very long to get there. Like, we should wait until we see actual games this year, but like, it's not going to take much for me to make that.
It's incredible. Yeah. Like, I didn't think it was going to be this quick, and here we are. I guess we're going to year three, so suddenly, quickly. With the shortened pandemic season, that thing kind of happens.
Yeah, but the other quarterback that really stood out was Jackson Dart. And like you said, it's tough for Miller Moss because I think he was working with the weaker offensive line. The gold team had a tough time of it in a lot of ways. But Jackson Dart looked... I've done the comparison of like, Miller Moss is Cody Kessler And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean the skill set is a little bit more limited in that sense, but he could theoretically overcome that with what he brings to the table mentally. Jackson Dart, to me, the Sam Darnold comparison bloomed to life in this game, in the sense of you just hold your breath when he has the ball in his hands. He might make a spectacular throw. He might scramble. And I think that he really benefited from the sort of the hold your breath and hope kind of moment, even though he got sacked just as many times as everyone else. But every time he got sacked, you sort of tilted your head and go,
I think he
could have
slithered away from
a
couple of
those.
Yeah,
most of them, I feel like, no, that's not a sack. He runs for 8 or 10 yards there, or he gets loose and is able to throw the ball, you know, something like that. So I think that there's just that it factor, and I'm a fan of saying it factor, because sometimes there's just, you can't necessarily describe what it is that makes a player so exciting, but Jackson Dart has it, and he made some spectacular throws. He just looked outstanding. And you know, I would have guessed that Jackson Dart would be the number two quarterback this year after having seen him in person before the spring game. After the spring game, I'm all in on that. I think Jackson Dart is QB2. And certainly with Mo Hassan getting injured, a knee injury certainly did not look good.
Did not look good. He had a nifty little scramble there.
And
that was the play he got hurt on. Picks up 9 yards on a scramble. He threw a beautiful touchdown pass to Brew McCoy in his first drive.
Beautiful, yes. I think right in between two defenders.
Mo Hassan might have had the perfect game in the sense that he leads the first drive, beautiful touchdown drive, beautiful pass to Brew McCoy. The second drive starts with that scramble where he picks up 9 yards, but then he immediately goes down with a leg injury.
Yeah.
Those never look good. He's gonna go off for an MRI. We'll see how that goes. Obviously, you hope for the best there. We'll see how it goes. But
right.
Miller Moss, like you said, I don't think Johnny Unitas couldn't have done anything with what he was dealt with.
Yeah.
So while Dart had a visually better game than Moss, that's not a detriment to Moss. That's a credit to Dart.
Yeah.
So don't take anything about that as a judgment between the two. Dart just looks really, really, really good. Part of that is because he was throwing to Michael Jackson III. That connection, yeah, the Slovis, the London connection, those two definitely on the same page. They have a chemistry, and you know that Keaton loves throwing to Drake London. Jackson Dart loves throwing to Michael Jackson.
Yes, and we saw that in the first couple of weeks of practice. You know, Michael Jackson looked like he's somebody who has something going for him. And it was a bummer that Gary Bryan Jr. ended up with a hamstring injury early in this game, because he had been one of the rising stars of practice as well. But Michael Jackson definitely lived up to what I would have hoped from him in terms of making his presence known in this scenario. And yeah, you can see Dart and Jackson having that kind of connection, having that chemistry that they get to build from day one, that's just super, super exciting to see.
Yeah, we didn't see anything out of Katie Nixon. I think part of that is because he was on the gold team with Miller Moss. I don't know when Miller Moss was supposed to hit him, except for that one pass.
The worst moment of the game.
He underthrows him.
Of the day for Miller Moss. Katie Nixon is wide open
on
for
a corner
probably
route,
a
downfield.
30-yard gain, and Miller just missed him.
You're playing
him
Madden. It's like when you go with the tight formation, and you got like Bucks post perfectly to Katie Nixon right there, underthrew him.
But
Ryan Abraham said on Twitter he thought it was a miscommunication. That could have been the case.
It's possible.
Either way,
you never know.
It was a huge gain that was right there for the taking.
Freshman quarterback and a new receiver. Yeah, it just didn't work out. But the other, I just wanted to point out a couple more standouts before we have to go. But Josh Jackson, speaking of guys who lived up to the first couple of weeks of practice, you know, I was kind of almost expecting Josh Jackson. Okay, it's going to fade a little bit. Josh Jackson was balling. He was going up against Drake London and like going toe to toe with Drake London.
Had a great PBU.
Yeah, he had a pass breakup. He had an interception.
Interception completely on Dart.
He baited Dart into it, I think, and then surprised him with how high he could jump. Like, it was nice. It was nice to see that from him. And, he got a PI going up against Drake London. But, like, I was really pleased with the work that he did, especially down in that goal line period. When they were down at the goal line. When you're matched up against Drake London, you're not getting eaten alive. That says a lot about you as a corner. And I think that Josh Jackson really stood out Chris Steele had a good moment. Doran Hewitt had his interception. You know, I think there's a lot to be excited about with the secondary as well.
Yeah, and the other guy who really ate on defense was Drake Jackson. He had a series in which he had a sack and a bat down of a pass from Keaton Slovis. So he looks like he is in prime position to be the Drake Jackson that you want him to be. I think if you look at this team defensively, they're exactly where you want. I think you need to see a little bit more out of the linebackers in terms of activation, being active. The defensive line all over the place, constantly in the backfield, constantly making plays and wreaking havoc. The secondary doing the same thing. IPM could have decapitated Slovis when he came in on a sack. He just ran by him, didn't even bother touching him for the sack. He
untouched
could have
off
just,
the edge.
It would have been brutal, right?
Yeah.
And so everyone in the secondary had their moments. The linebackers, outside of walk-on Spencer Gilbert, a little MIA, but at the same point, when you have everyone else wrecking havoc, it's not a huge deal, I guess?
Yeah, Helton was complimentary of the linebackers in his postgame, but I will admit I didn't notice a single one of them outside of pre-play.
Yeah.
So
same thing here.
Yeah, Spencer Gilbert had an interception, so he was the most noticeable.
It also doesn't hurt when the running game is not getting to them for the most part.
Yeah, so, that's fair.
Yeah. Anyways, that's going to wrap up the CarCast. We're going to talk so much more about the spring game and our thoughts about spring football thus far in this upcoming week's episode. Thanks for listening. As always, again, go to earthechofoods.com/minutemedia and use the code MINUTE15 to get 15% on Cacao Bliss. If you want to revolutionize your chocolate eating life over there, and we'll catch you later this week.
Yep.
Got a final word?
The final word is helicopter, as in it was a beautiful day at the Coliseum for the sun to shine and the breeze to blow and the helicopter to fly overhead for most of the practice.
Forever. Yes. Would not go away. But that's it for us. We'll see you next time. See ya.
See ya.